Chapter 13, Bringing It All Together. If you're anything like me, you're chomping at the bit for a formula on how to live like a victor in this world that seems to victimize us at every turn. I've presented a lot of data on how victim thinking can creep into our lives, but I've presented very little on how to live like a victor. Sorry to say it this plainly, but the lack of formulas is no mistake. I've done my best to make this book as devoid of formulas as possible. Why? Because formulas often fuel our ability to let victim thinking rule in our lives. Look, I've got nothing wrong with formulas. My engineering training is based on formulas. The physical and scientific parts of our flesh depend on formulas. Were it not for the formulas surrounding gravity, our very existence would not be understandable and quantifiable. No, formulas in of themselves aren't bad. It's what we do with formulas that gets us into trouble, where victor living is concerned. In the opening of this book, I shared with you the victim thinking pattern that took control of my life as a result of my misapplication of the formula, hard work equals success. For many of us, this, along with a myriad of other formulas, has played a crucial role in our lives. This particular formula is based on a truth that is unmistakable. Those who apply themselves will almost always do better than those who choose not to apply themselves. The problem with formulas is our definition of what the outcome should look like. My victim thinking that resulted from the hard work equals success formula came about because of my definition of success. When I found myself not achieving what I thought success should look like as a result of my hard work, I was challenged in ways that made me doubt my abilities, my life choices, and at times my very existence. No, formulas aren't the problem. It's our own thinking as to what will happen if we properly apply those formulas that messes us up. At this point in the book, I hope you are sold. I hope you want to live the life of a victor. I can't provide you a formula to get there, but I can sum up this book by describing certain characteristics that all victors share. Here they are. Victor characteristic number one, eternal perspective. Victors view things differently. They don't let current circumstances define who they are. Victors believe that there is an eternal part of them that simply cannot be taken away, no matter the extent of the circumstances, of the constraints and challenges they face in this world. Even if they don't believe in the Christian God, victors have a sense that there is something more than these couple handfuls of decades that we are all destined to live. Victors with an eternal perspective aren't defined by the stumbles and falls they experience in this lifetime. Yes, we get upset at failure, but failure doesn't define us. Victors have a sense that there is some destiny out there greater than what this life might be capable of fully revealing. Even when this life beats us black and blue, victors hold on to the fact that they were created for more. Eternal thinking gives victors the ability to change their attitude. There is something positive about people who believe that they have all eternity to discover and apply their destinies. It is when we think that time is limited that we start to let victim thinking overtake our attitudes. Having an eternal perspective doesn't guarantee a good attitude, but it does give victors the ability to get to a place where they can choose what their attitude will be. This eternal perspective leads to a peace in the soul that enables the person trying to live the life of a victor to find rest. That rest is something that is noticeable to those who don't have it. There is something powerful in a person who has peace and a good attitude. They make the best leaders. People are attracted to them. Just think how powerful it would be in your world if you exuded an air of peace and dealt with the crazy things of your life with an attitude that others just don't seem to be able to muster up. Victor characteristic number two, identity. Victors know who they are. They have spent a lot of time working to disconnect their roles and the relative success or failures found in those roles from the reality of who they are. Victors know that roles are temporary. The fact that they are a success today does not guarantee success tomorrow. Victors have learned that they can't trust what they do to define who they are. Those victors who hold the particular belief that Jesus is their Savior know that their identity as God's child is secure. They work hard not to let their job, titles, ministries, and or anything else on this earth take away from the power that comes with being the child of an all-powerful being like our God. Child of God is their identity now and forevermore. Those living the victor's life who don't have a belief in Jesus have found a definition of identity that they too believe will outlast their lives here on earth. They also do all they can to make sure things of this earth don't rob them of the foundation of their true identity. Identity is crucial due to the fact that we will all face times of great success and times of miserable failure. If our identity is tied to things that can be judged by our success or our failure, then we are ripe for victim thinking to take over. Victors can't stand the thought of being on the roller coaster ride of identity that will happen when that identity is tied to roles that they play. They have done that way too many times and want something different in their lives. Victor characteristic number 3, relationship. Victors are relational people. They value life in ways that victims often miss. Victors have found ways to be productive in relationships. They work hard at ending the use of relationships to get what they want. They have found that others can neither completely nor consistently provide what they need to feel good about themselves. This lesson has come at a high cost. Many relationships haven't survived in the victor's life. Some very important personal connections have paid the price that enabled the victor to learn that the actions of others will almost never be enough to bring the kind of fulfillment that they've been looking for in this world. Victors now see the importance of being in relationship. This is particularly the case with their relationship with their God. Victors have stopped trying to use God to get what they think they need and or deserve in this life. Now they just want to relate to others and to God. Victors want relationship for no other reason than this life is better when there are connections. Victors realize that they will always need to be connected to people and to their God. They know that connection is a blessing, not a tool for getting what they want. If there is any regret in the victor's life, it is that they didn't learn this lesson of the importance of relationship before so many of their past connections were damaged beyond repair. But victors know that even those losses are meant to be defining parts of their existence. The lessons learned work to make the relationships they now have be exactly what they are meant to be in the victor's life. Victor characteristic number 4, not driven by have to. Victors have learned that have to makes freedom something that is hard to obtain. They have found that the soul is such a powerful force in moving them towards freedom or towards bondage. Victors don't have to do things, they get to do things. Get to is the key to which direction the victor moves in their life. It isn't that victors are so independently wealthy that they don't need to work or do things that aren't their first choice when it comes to their daily responsibilities. It is just that they realize that they have a choice when it comes to everything that comes across their path. They don't have to do a single thing. Victors have realized that the consequences of their choices might not be all they would like them to be, but they know that they have a choice. This choice gives them a feeling of freedom that makes the hard choices that much easier to make. Victors aren't always happy with the fact that the things they choose to do don't measure up to exactly what they want for their lives. They have just settled on the reality that choice brings a power to self that is not found by those living a have-to kind of life. Victor characteristic number 5, not easily offended. Offense is the killer of faith. Not only does offense make it hard to believe in something bigger than oneself, it kills the faith we might have in our own ability to move from victim thinking to victor living. The victor has found that offense is a waste of time. Offense to the victor is something that they are quick and systematically weeding out of their lives. It isn't that victors don't get offended, it is that they quickly move from offense to forgiveness. This movement is what gives them the power to see what is really going on. Offense is an attack on the victor's identity. Since victors have a firm handle on identity, they work to remove anything that might make the victor doubt and or tout their identity. Victors also realize that those who are habitual offenders are nothing more than victims who haven't found their place where victor living might be a possibility. Victors know what it feels like to live in a place of temporary identity. Because they know how lost one is when they don't know who they are, it makes it easier for the victor to have compassion for the offender and move to a place where forgiveness sets the victor free. There you go. 5 characteristics of victor living that, if applied in the right way, will make it possible for you, too, to live life as a victor. Sad part is that now that this book has been boiled down into something like a process, you're on the road to being stuck in victim thinking all over again. Why? Because human nature is crippled with the desire to live a good and productive life. Formulas often make it easier to determine how to get that good and productive life. Formulas also make it possible for us to think we can accurately measure our success at going after the goal of a good and productive life. It's not necessarily a bad thing that we try to apply formulas to make our life what we want it to be. It is just that formulas can introduce the flaws inherent and our limited ability to judge that can make it possible for even the best motives of a person trying to live a victor kind of life can end up opening the door to victim thinking when we allow the process we try to apply through formulas take over. If you take any concept and make it a formula, it goes something like this. If I do A, then B will be the result. Larry Crabb has a book out called The Pressure's Off. In this book, he describes how we use formulas, particularly in the Christian church, to try to make it possible for us to get what we think we need to maintain the good life we sometimes think we deserve. He calls this, if I do A, I will get B, formula way of looking at life, linear thinking. Linear thinking is a killer to the process of moving from being a victim to a victor. Why? Because A does not always lead to B. Go back to my formula, hard work equals success. I wanted B, success. I thought the way to get to B was do A, hard work. When I didn't get B, when B didn't come about the way I thought it should, I felt victimized by all those people who made this formula part of my way of doing things. Do you know how much pressure I put on myself to make A give me B? So much pressure that my health, both physical and mental, was pushed to the limit. Crabb has it right. Linear thinking can't be supported in a person's life in the long run. Why? The pressure's too great. According to Crabb, there's a better way. I believe that way is what makes us able to live life like a victor and not be so victimized when our A doesn't lead to B. Here's what's going to happen if you make the five characteristics of a victor your A to get you to the B of living the life of a victor. You're going to have a mindset of what a victor looks like. Victory is going to be a part of that definition. It is just our natural way to do whatever it takes to make victory a good life, part of what victor living should look like. With your B defined, you will set goals and change habits to make the five characteristics more and more part of your life. Don't get me wrong, great things will happen if you incorporate these characteristics of victor living into your life. But what I'm saying is that eventually your definition of what victorious living is supposed to look like will miss the mark. A hiccup will occur that will make you either doubt the characteristics or, worse than that, doubt yourself. That's when the pressure is really turned up to an unbearable level. Formulas that show any sign of not doing what we intended for them to do either make us double down on our efforts or make us give up altogether. That's why I've been so careful not to make this book about the steps you need to apply in order to live the life of a victor. I just don't want you to make the mistake of taking some valuable information and turning it into an if I do A, I will get B kind of existence. You were made for so much more than that. I realize that life would be so much better if A always brought about B. I'm so happy for those people whose A's are making their B's come to fruition. I just know that it will not always be the case for those people. And when B doesn't happen, the door is open for victim thinking to take control. My encouragement to you is this. Don't make this book about formulas. Of course, do an evaluation and see if you're doing things to make these characteristics part of your everyday life, but don't give in to the temptation to let your definition of victorious living be what defines how you are living your life as a victor. If you do, you too will be in a place of profound disappointment at some time in your life. That disappointment will eventually make it harder and harder to live like the victor I've been presenting in this book. Whose dreams are you chasing? I came across this fictional story in a Reader's Digest years ago. I so relate to this man's plight that I want to share it with you. As the story goes, there was a man who found himself on his deathbed way before his time. What was killing him? It wasn't cancer or some other horrible ailment. It was a disease of the heart that is so hard to cure when it has set itself in so fully. You see, this man had dreams that defined what he thought a good life looked like. As a young man, he dreamed of marrying the blonde captain of the cheerleading squad and having three good-looking, strong, enterprising sons that would take over the long-lasting and profitable business this man dreamt he would develop. The legacy this man saw in his life was something that hinged on a level of success that would require dedication, ability, and a bit of luck. This man thought that these things would come his way if he did all the things he was trained to do and did his best to do them right. The man was banking on A always leading to B when it came to his dreams. As the years passed, the man didn't end up marrying the blonde cheerleading captain. Instead, he married a wonderful woman who loved him so. Though she wasn't the bombshell he thought he would marry, the man realized that the beauty of this woman was more than just skin deep, and he was okay with that. Then children came, one daughter, then a second, and finally a third. To top it off, the third daughter had a disability that required the entire family to sacrifice in ways that made it harder and harder for the man to be able to build that legacy of a business he thought he would always have. It wasn't all of these apparent contradictions to his original dream that made the man feel like his life was so messed up. It was just that he was beginning to wonder what he had done wrong to make his life so different than what he had always dreamt it would be. As the decades came and went, a malaise permeated the man's soul. Though the love of his wife and daughters was unmistakable, the man couldn't shake the feeling that that love wasn't enough. Resentment began to take hold of the man's heart. If only my life had been different. If I had taken more aggressive steps to marry that cheerleader, he thought to himself, maybe my life wouldn't be the way it is today. It wasn't that the man's life was a failure. It just wasn't what he always thought it would be. His unrealized expectations were literally killing him. As time went on, various physical symptoms started to plague the man. Aches and pains began to be there all the time. A tiredness crept into the man's life that he just couldn't shake. Though he tried remedy after remedy, nothing seemed to be able to rid the man of the feeling that his life was a waste and that his dreams were a complete charade. His physical ailments were but another sign his life had taken a bad turn at some point or another. The tiredness started to impact the man's health in ways that brought great concern to him and his family. Finally, the man found himself in a hospital bed, literally dying of a broken heart. Not broken because of a failed relationship, but broken because of the dreams that were never going to come about in the man's life. Victim thinking was literally killing this man. As he lay there in bed, he cried out to God the question we all have when our expectations of what our good life is supposed to be aren't fully met. The man cried out, "Why? Why didn't you give me the dreams of my heart all these years? Why haven't you been the power behind the dreams when you put the dreams there in the first place?" In a moment of silence in that hospital bed, the man actually heard God respond. God opened the eyes of the man to the enormity of the plan that was at work in his life. God let the man see how the love of his wife had carried him and his family through thick and thin. God revealed the marvelous talents of the daughters he had given him. God opened his eyes to the fullness of their admiration for a father who had sacrificed so much for their well-being. God let the man see how his handicapped daughter had brought into his life a fullness that was so easily overlooked. God went on to show the man the impact his mildly successful business had had on the lives of the people the man would probably never know. God let the man see what a victor he was in spite of the self-defined victimizing events that had such a grip on his heart. Though the man was deeply moved in a way that brought a great deal of healing to his physical body, the pain of the lost dream still overwhelmed him, and he cried out to God, "Yes, but what about my dreams?" God responded with a simple yet profound statement. God said, "I understand you had dreams for your life, but I too had dreams for you. My love for you is so great that I wanted the best for you, and that's what I gave you. I gave you my dreams instead of yours because my dreams are so much better than yours." As the story goes, something happened to the man's heart at that moment. When he realized that his life wasn't an example of failure, but proof that a loving God provided the best for him, a confidence overtook him in a way that literally turned him from the brink of death. The man began to appreciate the dreams of God over his own expectations of what those dreams should look like. That shift in thinking took him from the bondage of victim thinking to the freedom of victor living. The same thing can happen to you and to me. Victor living isn't about us getting what we think would be best for us to live the good life we chase so relentlessly. The victor's life is about living the dream, not our dream, but God's dream. If this God is all-knowing and all-powerful and was willing to do anything to bring us into relationship with Him, doesn't it make sense that this same God would have dreams that are so much better for us than our dreams could ever be? I'm not saying that God doesn't want us to have a good life. I'm simply saying that our definition of good might not always line up with what this life will bring our way. I believe victors have found a way to live their life in a manner that keeps their hands loosely fastened to the dream of what their life is supposed to look like. This way of living brings about a peace that is literally a healing balm to a hurting and discouraged heart. I still have dreams in my life, dreams of great impact and significance. But as I age, I'm realizing that those dreams are less and less likely to materialize the way I thought they would. In the past, this has devastated me. It made me feel like a failure, worthless, and a victim. So much so that I was easily able to victimize the people who are the central part of the dream God has dreamt for my life. Victor living isn't about compromise. It isn't about trading one dream for a lesser dream. That's what victim thinking is all about. Victor living is about living life to the fullest. It's going after all we have the desire and determination to go for, not because we have to go for it in order to prove that we are victors. No, that kind of living is what leads to victim thinking. Victors go for all they can because there is a joy that comes with their actions, a joy that springs from the fact that victors are free and that freedom brings a peace that is truly beyond understanding. The motion picture kind of life. Remember that friend whose wife is battling breast cancer? He said something the other day when we were discussing whether we see things in a glass half empty or a glass half full kind of way. As I was being down on myself for being a glass half empty kind of guy, he made a statement that is simply profound. He said, maybe we need to look at it another way. Maybe we need to be looking at life as a motion picture and not a snapshot. He went on to explain what he meant by that. As we all know, motion pictures are just what the name implies. Many, many single images spliced together and ran at a speed that makes the still images look like they have motion. He said that if we just look at one image in a reel of a motion picture, we're likely to get the wrong impression of what is actually going on in the film. Could it be that my feeling that I'm a glass half empty kind of person is just a snapshot of where I am at this very moment? What if God is in the process of filling my glass and all I'm seeing at this moment is the point where it is just halfway full? That's Victor thinking if I've ever heard it. My life isn't over yet. There are big things still to come. If I get stuck looking at an image that defines my life at this particular moment, I'm well on my way to staying in that place where I might fail to let the motion picture continue. Victim thinking does that for us. It stops the reel from moving and we get stuck in a single frame that we mistakenly think defines our life. That was what the man in the Reader's Digest story was doing. That kind of thinking almost took him to his death. Unfortunately, it has been the death of so many of those who have gone before us as well. So what's a person to do who wants to live life as a victor? I hate to make it this simple, but here it is. Take your next breath. That's it. Take another step. Breathe another deep lungful of air and let your body do what it does best. Live. Yes, your circumstances might be horrible at this moment, but this isn't where you're going to stay. Life is not a snapshot. It's a motion picture. Sometimes change in circumstances happens by just taking enough breaths to get us through where we are today and move us to where we are going in the future. Our job is to try and let our expectations of where we want to be not be the driving force behind what makes us victors in the first place. What are you going to choose today? Are you going to let the breaths you take today be what drives you toward a future that has been meticulously designed by you to suit your every need? Or are you going to move in a direction where you keep open the possibility that a far greater dream might be part of your destiny? A dream that you would never have dreamt possible? A dream that you might not have ever seen coming? A dream that, quite frankly, you might not have chosen in the first place. Those who want to live the life of a victor, as described in this book, will choose the latter. I don't know how many answers you have found in this book. I don't believe answers are the reason this book was written. It has been my hope that the journey I've shared in these chapters is one that you can relate to in your own life. The road you take and the road I'm on will never be completely the same. But as our paths cross, I'm hoping we will be in a position to share how our lives have been more and more defined by victor living. I also hope that we see the places where our living, like victors, has rubbed off on others in ways that have set some people free. Now that's a dream we all can share and relish in. Take another breath and live. You are made to be a victor, and that is what you are.